our next case this morning is case number 101871, United States versus Culbertson. Ms. Solomon.
May it please the court, counsel. I represent Ms. Culbertson.
I think you'll have to keep your voice up.
I represent Ms. Culbertson on this appeal of her sentencing, and we challenge the sentence imposed in the district court on two grounds. The district court's sentence was unreasonable because it failed to adequately consider the impact of Ms. Culbertson's sentence in light of all her family circumstances. And secondly, the district court's references to Ms. Culbertson's religious background and training were an impermissible basis upon which to rely for sentencing. Our first contention that we argued below and here is that it was unreasonable under Section 3553A to impose the sentence of 12 months and one day because the judge failed to consider the totality of the circumstances in light of the hardship to her entire family. And that hardship was not the typical kind of hardship that occurs where a parent is sentenced to incarceration and has young children or dependents upon which who rely upon her for care or support. The district court in this case recognized the youngest child's a medical condition and that Ms. Culbertson was the primary caregiver for that child. But it did not address the hardship to the other minor boys or to her oldest son or to her father who was involved in the day-to-day care and support of her children. The district court also did not address the impact that her incarceration would have on her family structure in light of her and her family's estrangement from her husband who had moved out of the family home. And the divorce that was in the process of had not yet been filed, but was inevitable in light of the facts of the case. And she failed to address the custody issues that would arise during the course of those proceedings in light of Ms. Culbertson's incarceration.
Was she supposed to address besides the obvious? It's obvious that if someone's mother's going to be away from her kids for a year, that it's not good. She's got an infant that's got the disability or a very young child?
It's a two-year-old.
Two-year-old, okay. And then she's got an older son who's with a different father, and he's, 18, 19?
I believe he was 18.
Yeah.
And there was the two.
What is she supposed to say? Because obviously the judge observed that this money went, I guess, to the now divorced husband, got a car and a Harley, and misspent, wasn't spent for the benefit of the kids, even though that was $140,000.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know what more she could take into consideration.
Well, she didn't specifically look at the impact that it would have on the family structure beyond the impact in the normal case where a parent is absent from the home. In the normal case, the parent who is not incarcerated would be there. The continuity of the family would continue, obviously, without the incarcerated parent. But the stability of the household would remain. And I think that in this case, because that stability would be greatly impacted and would be removed, that took this case, that those factors constituted mitigating factors in light of this case, and that was not adequately considered by the court.
Okay. This seems, though, this, unfortunately, in the case of women, this is kind of normal when they're pulled out of a house and families left behind, because it's not a very stable household in the first place. So it's a big problem, but as the judge pointed out, with giving, charity got a below guideline, right?
She got 3 months below the guideline range.
So she gets 1 year.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Which is a great deal of time in light of the young age of the children. I think that the fact that this impact would be greater than the ordinary case, that the consideration was not sufficient and the sentence was unreasonable under Section 3553A, and it's distinct. This case is distinct from the Gary case, in which the whole sentencing hearing was focused on the impact and the arrangements that would be made in light of both parents being incarcerated. So I think it's distinguishable from this court's case in Gary. The second contention is that the district court impermissibly relied on Ms. Culbertson's religious background and training in imposing sentence. Now, clearly this was procedurally not permitted and procedurally unreasonable under Section 5H1.10 of the sentencing guidelines and 28 U.S.C. Section 994D, which directed the Sentencing Commission not to allow the consideration of religion, ethnic origin, national origin, sex, or race in the application of the sentencing guidelines and imposing sentence.
Wasn't that more a reflection on her personal history of just the fact that she went to Catholic school and knew right and wrong and that sort of thing? It didn't get into a great deal about what teaching is. It's just, you know, a couple of references in that context.
There was one reference with respect to her background and in terms of her moral and background and her knowledge of right and wrong. But she also told her that it was a particularly aggravating factor that the money had gone towards a better lifestyle and had not been used to send her children to Catholic school as her father had done for her.
Yeah, instead of buying the Harley and the car and that sort of thing. I think that's when it was in comparison. There were things that could have been mitigating had she done something like that. I think that's all she was saying. It didn't matter whether it was a Catholic school or something. I think wasn't that what it was in context?
I think it was more than that. I think it was specifically relying on that, on her specific religious background, which I don't believe is permitted under the guidelines or under the law.
Okay.
Yeah, these remarks may have been somewhat inappropriate, but is there any indication that they really had anything to do with the sentence?
I think based...
She said, well, you ought to know better or something like that. Sort of a general comment like that. Would that affect a sentence? Would that be a...
Well, if it had been a general... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. If it had been a general comment about her knowing the difference between right and wrong, then, of course, that would have gone into the mix of the totality of the circumstances. But the specific putting that into the mix of the totality of circumstances and referring to her religious background and training, I think, was inappropriate.
It had no impact on the sentence, though. She got a below-guideline sentence. You know, we can disagree about what the import of these remarks were. I tend to read them as sort of generic statements on how your client should have known better. And highlighting the use of the stolen money rather than any improper consideration of religion as a part of the sentencing factors. But even if some line had been crossed, it didn't impact the sentence here because she got a below-guideline sentence. If it was used as an aggravating factor and actually increased the sentence, then there might be some cause for concern.
Well, we don't know what the impact of that was because
it didn't increase the sentence because it's a below guideline sentence.
But we were requesting that she get a sentence of probation or some kind of
high. The judge was clearly disinclined to give probation in this instance, given the severity of the offense. You know, apart from the reference to your client's religion, this was not going to be a probation case for this judge.
But we don't know where, from probation to 12 months, her sentence might have been without this consideration of her religious background and her religious training.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Dollier.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Steve DeLeer, and I represent the United States of America. The district court in this case imposed a below-guideline sentence based on the defendant's arguments in mitigation. The district court did not err in failing to give an even lower sentence. First, with respect to the family circumstances, the district court did consider the family circumstances of this defendant. First, taking a look at the transcript of the sentencing hearing, at the very beginning of the district court judge's comments, after defense counsel and the government had argued their positions with respect to sentencing, the district court asked questions about each of the defendant's children's ages, the marital situation between the defendant and her now ex-husband, as well as the living arrangements for each of the children. Then later, at the end of the sentencing hearing, the district court judge again returned to the children and allowed a delayed reporting date to BOP, Bureau of Prisons, because really two reasons. One, the youngest child may have been undergoing a heart procedure and the district court judge wanted to allow the mother to be there, the defendant to be there for that procedure. And two, the other two children, the two older children but still minors, were in school and the district court judge wanted her, the defendant, to be present for them to end the school year. Secondly, defendant made much of the fact that, you know, the youngest child was the primary focus. Well, in looking at the briefs and also the transcript from the oral arguments in before the district court judge, that was the principal argument raised by the defendant here. There were unique circumstances involving that youngest child. That is the youngest child, the child that the district court focused on for purposes of sentencing, and again, specifically referenced the youngest child in giving a below-guideline sentence here of 12 months and one day. A sense which also accounts for good time credit for this particular defendant.
The dubious thing is about the soon-to-be, I guess, ex-husband, whether he's going to be back in charge of the kids or whether they're going to remain with the maternal grandparent and the stepbrother. I don't know whether that was cleared up or not or if that's still up in the air.
Your Honor, that was addressed at part in the beginning about what the family circumstances were as far as where the divorce proceeding. That was not in the transcript, review of the transcript, that wasn't an issue that was heavily discussed at the oral argument stage of this. Typically, in a family circumstances case that falls out of the norm, you have a mother going to jail where there is nobody else to take care of the kid. What was set forth in the PSR here, as well as in the government's response brief, is that financially these children were already being provided for by the defendant's father and financially by her now ex-husband, who at the time was her husband. So there were circumstances presented that these kids were going to be provided for. It was just how exactly. So that was considered by the district court. Second, with respect to the defendant's religious background, references to that at the sentencing hearing. In this case, it was not error for the district court to reference that. These were facts that were in the PSR that were not objected to by the defendant. Specifically, the defendant's brother stated that that the brother and the defendant came from a close-knit Irish Catholic family in which they were taught right from wrong, and that they came from a family where they had a father who worked two jobs to sacrifice to send the defendant and her brother to Catholic schools. The judge then referenced that in passing First, with respect to the history and characteristics of the defendant, basically contrasting this defendant, who was given many opportunities and had a good upbringing where she learned right from wrong, from a defendant also occasionally in front of the judge where the parents were criminals, the neighborhood was crime-ridden, and there were no educational opportunities. The judge was just emphasizing the point that the history and characteristics of this defendant were not mitigating factors. And second, with respect to the severity of the crime and the nature and circumstances of the crime, the judge again returned to those facts in the PSR to emphasize the motive of this crime, and that the motive and the nature and circumstances of the crime were not mitigating either. That the $140,000 that were stolen by this defendant went for the defendant's vehicles. For vehicles were mentioned, a Harley Davidson was mentioned, money was spent at Best Buy for her, the defendant, and her husband, not to put bread on the table, not to pay the mortgage, not to pay bills, not to pay for a kid's education at a private school. Again, the judge was just highlighting the fact that this was not a mitigating circumstance in this case. And lastly, and maybe most importantly, there was no connection between these passing references to a religious background and the sentence and a harsher sentence in this case. In fact, it was just the opposite. The judge gave a downward variance, gave a below-guideline sentence of 12 months and one day to this defendant. So she clearly took in the appropriate circumstances and gave this defendant a below-guideline sentence based on her mitigation arguments. And if there's no further questions from the court, the government will rest on its brief and ask that this court affirm the district court's sentence in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Solomon, your time had expired, so we will take the case under advisement. Our thanks to both counsel.